Okay. Good afternoon. This is Julie Fedorchak with the North Dakota Public Service Commission. We are gathered on the 12th floor of the State Capitol for an informal hearing on case number PU-16-644. I don't have any opening comments today. I'll ask my colleague, Commissioner Crispin, if he has any thoughts to share.
I do not. I'm ready to get started, but welcome, everybody.
Okay, good. We have in the room some executives. They're shaking their head no. Some employees of, I believe, Xcel Energy to talk through the request that they have before us. And so we'll go around the room and introduce ourselves, but then I'll ask Commissioner Kalk if he has any opening comments. Do you have any opening comments to make now, or
I can
do introductions first? Okay, since it's his portfolio, we'll let him have the opening comments and lead the discussion. So, all right, so myself, Julie Fedorchak, Commissioner.
Randy Christman, Commissioner.
Ryan Kolk, Commissioner.
All righty.
Jerry Leon with staff.
And Jerry's going to need a mic, so we'll either share or grab him one. Okay.
Thanks, Randy.
Turn, there you go.
Dave.
Oh.
Steven. Now we're good. David Brock, Transmission Planning Engineer, Xcel Energy.
Noel Klinert, Transmission Project Manager, Xcel Energy.
Tom Hillstrom, Permitting Manager with Xcel.
Okay, and then a variety of people in the audience. Okay, well, Commissioner Kalk.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
The floor is yours.
So there, Dave, Noel, and Tom, there's no attorney in your group today.
No, we do have a couple of attorneys perhaps watching back at the
Okay, office. No, I just want to verify that. I appreciate not bringing attorneys. We can get more work done. So that's where I was going with that discussion. But the only thing is usually we ask the attorney at the end of the deal if it's an informal sort of offer this up, and Julie usually asks that question. But so who's leading the discussion for you guys? Tom, are you going to do it?
Well, I can lead it off and just give you an outline of what we're going to talk about today.
Okay, because really only opening comments that I would have is I read through the filings and I think it all makes sense. I do have some questions perhaps about, I never did really pull out what what's causing these problems, but I suspect you guys will cover that. And other than that, I really, maybe just at the end of it, tell us what the siting application might be coming and that kind of thing, just for general awareness. But other than that, the only big question I had is just give us a why and we'll go from there. So I would turn it over to Tom, if that's okay with you guys.
Sounds great.
Sure. And what we had planned to do is David Brock here will give us a description of exactly what you're asking for about the need for the project. Noel will then describe the facilities that we're proposing, and then I will talk about the outreach that we've done so far and our plans to submit the corridor and route permit applications and give you some timing on that.
Very good.
Perfect.
So we'll go ahead and start off with the need. On the first slide, Soris, which is the substation that NSP currently serves, all of its NSP. Soris is the substation that currently serves all of NSP's load in the city of Minot. It is currently fed by two 115 kV lines that come out of Mallard and McHenry substations. So right there is, Mallard substation is right there, and McHenry substation is right there. So I'll go to this bullet point right here. We've had some pretty robust load growth in this area. I believe the peak load in the city of Minot in 2008 was 80 megawatts. This past summer in 2016, we hit 93 megawatts, so approximately 16% over that time period.
One of the things, Dave, that I was just trying to, we've done a lot of work in the eastern part of the state with some of the transmission, but not so much around the Minot area. So just trying to understand how the grid lays out there. I know that, I believe that Verendry has you guys boxed in up there, right, with the service area agreement. So you're not like acquiring new property with your load growth, are you? It's just more load in this defined area that you have in the inner service agreement.
That is correct. We're not acquiring any service territory from the co-ops in the area. It's just a saturation of load in our current service territory.
So with the flooding, we must have lost a bunch of load there for a while. And how did that all play itself out? Was there a dip? And then this load now is, I mean, the flood, I guess I'm surprised there's that much load growth with the flood in there.
I'm not exactly sure how the flood affected
and
the load growth.
You could jump in, I guess, too. But,
you know, just from my visits to the area, we're seeing construction of new businesses, hotels, new schools being built in the city. So I would say I've seen more growth from the commercial side. I'm not sure exactly how the residential played.
And then the transmissions that come into there, are these lines you're talking about, are they all yours, or do you own them with MDU or with Otter, or with MDU or Otter Tail or GRE? There's some relationships that are up there. I mean,
that is correct. There are several owners of transmission in this area. So the 115 line that goes from McHenry to Souris is owned by NSP. GRE owns the McHenry substation and the 230 kV lines that go south to Stanton and Coal Creek and then east to Devil's Lake. Basin Electric Cooperative owns the Logan substation. They own one of the 115 lines that terminates into Mallard. WAPA also owns a 115 line that terminates into Mallard and also the 115 that goes east to Rugby. And I do believe that who's the other co-op there? That
Central Power.
Central Power owns the 115 line that goes from Mallard north to Roofville that serves the Minot Air Force Base.
So how does what they're doing in their systems tie into your challenges here? I mean, it seems like it's all interconnected grid, so it could be stuff that they're having growth in. Is it affecting you that the cost allocation when it comes to pay for this thing is – is that going to be all you guys, or is it going to be spread somehow? Because
so we did work with Basin Electric. I think that's actually the next slide. Just because of the significant amount of transmission owners in this area, we got together to do a long-term planning study to serve the loads in this area, and we have a plan. And I know NSP has routed our plan through MISO's open planning process, and I believe Basin Electric is also routing some upgrades in this area through the SPP open planning process. Okay. But as far as I know on cost allocation, my understanding it will be that whatever NSP constructs will be borne by NSP's customers and vice versa for Basin.
Jerry, do you have anything to offer on that? Because that's one of the things that I always get skittish with. They're quick to tell us to pay for everything, and then the other way around, they're quick to get us to pay for all their projects. Are these clearly stuff that NSP should be paying for on their own?
I think that Basin is building some things here, and NSP is building some things, and each is having their own. For MISO cost sharing, since these are reliability projects driven by load growth, MISO did away with its RECB cost sharing, and so each transmission owner has to just take care of their own.
Fair enough.
Before we move on from these initial points, I understood you to say that your Souris substation, that you're serviced from the McHenry substation and the Mallard substation. But the Mallard substation, then there's lines that go east toward Rugby and south toward the Stanton station, correct?
No, the lines that go south from Mallard go to WAPA's Garrison Generation Station and to Basin Electric's Logan substation, which has 230 that goes to the south to, I believe, Leyland Olds.
Okay. The one going east, that's not a source of generation. There's nothing over there, right? So the generation source is that to the south, either from WAPA or Leland Oldson.
That is correct. The generation source is provided by GRE, WAPA, and Basin Electric are the primary sources for the power flows in this area.
Okay. Well, I guess, what's the McHenry substation for then? Is that just to distribute load around to consumers down around Velva, or what does the McHenry substation do?
McHenry Substation feeds power to the city of Minot. It also has a connection to the Neal Substation. I do know that Otter Tail Power has 34.5 that's served out of there. I'm not terribly familiar with Otter Tail's 34.5 kV system, but McHenry provides bulk power to a variety of customers in the area.
Keep rolling, yeah.
Okay.
Don't we'll be jumping if we got questions.
Sounds good.
Wait till Commissioner Fedorchak starts asking. That's when they get tough.
But yeah, so we did. We got together with Basin Electric to map out the long-term transmission needs for this area. And so right now the proposal is NSP is proposing to construct a new 230 line from GRE's McHenry substation, approximately 20 miles in length, to a new 230 115 kV substation near Minot that we're calling Magic City. And we'll be tying in the local 115 lines into the new Magic City substation to provide the necessary capacity and voltage support for our loads at Cirrus and provide the necessary voltage support for our substation at Mallard that was identified in our study as being a problem. And we are proposing a double circuit configuration with the 115. So this green line right here represents a 230/115 kV double circuit line.
So they'll both be on it, a 230 and a 115.
That is correct.
And then from the Magic City substation, is there new facilities coming out of there as well?
No, what we're doing is we're routing a lot of the 115 existing assets in the area into the substation. So, for example, what is today known as the McHenry to Cirrus 115 line, that line will be broken and rerouted as individual circuits into the Magic City substation. So we're trying to utilize as much of the existing assets.
Okay. So what does that substation do there in the middle of that line? Why does that help?
It provides the needed transformation capacity expansion with the new 230-115 kV transformer we're proposing there. Also, since we're bringing the 230 from the remote McHenry substation to the city of Minot, we're also improving our voltage ability, our ability to maintain the voltage in the area. 230 can transmit power much more efficiently than the local 115 kV system. So by reducing the impedance of the area, we're reducing the voltage drop between McHenry substation and Cirrus substation.
What other options would you have to do that same thing?
We spent a lot of time looking at this. One of the challenges of this area is distance to the bulk sources. So we did look at a little bit longer lines. There's 230 available at Rugby. There's 230 available all the way south in the coalfields area. The challenge with those types of sources is that the distance makes them highly uneconomical. So we're trying to stick with the local 230 kV sources.
And the McHenry is a 230 kV source?
That is correct.
And what was the problem with just staying with that one? How is it? You're adding a new one in between there and Cirrus. So that was 230 kV. The new one is 230.
Well, the area needs an additional line to serve the load. And so there's just no 230 kV substation near Minot today, so we have to construct a new one.
McHenry was too far?
Yes, it's approximately, this line mileage right here from McHenry all the way to Cirrus is 25 miles.
Okay.
So
over that course, the voltage dropped too much.
That is correct. And also, by putting Magic City here, we're shortening the line lengths between the 230 source and Cirrus to just 5 miles. It significantly improves the voltage profile, as well as add the additional capacity to serve the load that we have at Cirrus.
All right. So on this map, it's not really quite to scale. It looks kind of like it's halfway between McHenry and Cirrus, but it's a lot closer than that.
That's correct. Okay. The map's not the scale. I would say we're cutting the line lengths down by approximately 80%, since there will be 5 miles instead of 25, if my math is correct.
So kind of, I see Julie's questions are really good questions. You don't have any generation that's your own up there at Xcel. You're buying it from GRE, and that's a long-term contract, right? But so you're building transmission, but what's your plan down the road if those contracts don't get renewed to bring the power into you guys?
When we did the joint planning study, one of the things that we did take contingencies of generation outages in the coal fields area, Garrison, Leyland Olds, Stanton, Coal Creek. So we feel that regardless of the generation situation, these assets will adequately serve Minot for now and into the future.
What's your contract with GRE to deliver that power? I mean, the coal fields are there, but you still rely on GRE to give you that power. You pay for it, but when's that contract end up?
I'm unfortunately not an expert in our markets department. I can't answer that question, unfortunately.
Okay. Well, I know this is to talk about this line particularly, but it's still a bigger question of that. I don't know that there's enough. You don't own the generation that you're going to be relying on in the future this transmission line is going to move. So I think there's a correlation to how long that contract is in place now. And I think I've heard somewhere that it's been extended or something, just to get a feel for if you've got a 20-year deal with GRE and where that really sits at. Because otherwise, if you got a 5-year contract with GRE, then they say no, then you got a stranded line. I may be extrapolating a little bit too far on that, but I think, anyway, that's kind of the question, I guess, to where that GRE line is at. So.
And then the Ward substation, the basin is building?
Right now, next to that?
It's real close?
No, I think the basin proposal with SPP is, I think this is just a little misnomer here, but I believe they're just bringing the Logan to Mallard 115 line in and out of the NSP Magic City substation. So it kind of comes back to tying these existing assets together to better utilize what's out in the field.
So the Ward is not a sure thing?
That's my understanding. As far as I know of what Basin has in the SPP process, it's bringing it in at 115 until SPP verifies the need for the new substation.
So they're going to be using yours, Magic City, right?
That is correct. They'll be tied in.
This is a pretty relatively, quote, simple project, but there's a lot of other back issues, though. Like when you're talking about SPP is now new to the basin thing, and we're in the middle of some pretty good arguments with North Dakota, South Dakota, and Minnesota all agree with Otter Tail on some cost allocation back and forth with SPP, and that's in front of FERC right now. But the relationship with you and Basin, I mean, you're talking about power moving back and forth. Do you know what rates are going to be back and forth? And maybe you can just go buy it from them and don't have to use your stuff.
When we did this planning,
or vice versa, they can buy it from you so they don't have to build more.
The way we have planned this was the idea that no one's charging each other for services. As far as I know, this plan is set up that each respective utility will have sufficient contract path to their loads and not have to worry about one utility charging another.
Does SPP agree with that, the sufficient? Because that's one of the issues at play with Otter Tail. they don't feel it's adequate, so they're charging Otter Tail, and that's the fight in front of FERC.
Otter Tail's in a little bit different situation than NSP. We have stronger ties to MISO sources than Otter Tail has. Our connection to the McHenry substation is our MISO source that connects back to the rest of the MISO system. So from a contract path perspective, we're in a little bit better position than Otter Tail.
Good answer. Jerry, that makes sense to you? He buffaloed me enough on that one. But that's the answer then, because you have a better path back to the MISO generation source where theirs isn't, because they're relying more to the west, is the point of the argument then? Okay.
I had originally thought that this was a mutual construction project, kind of, and that NSP was building their stuff and Basin was building their stuff. And I thought Basin's was a new substation because the Logan one is existing. But now it doesn't sound like Basin's building really anything except for just tying their line into your substation and coming back out of it again.
That is correct. So for Basin to proceed further, it has to get approval from the SPP open planning process. I do know that we work with them to help them submit these project ideas to SPP for consideration, but my understanding is right now SPP, in my opinion, tends to build things a little bit more incrementally. So I think they're starting out with the in and out. Then as the situation changes, they may come back. We need more transformation in the area. Basin, go build your substation, add a transformer.
Okay. All right.
Okay, so this slide again kind of goes over NSP's portion of the project, the proposed new Magic City substation, the new 230 kV line that goes to Geary's McHenry substation. Right now the project is estimated at $49 million, to use simple numbers. Oh, I'm sorry. No.
Yeah, Dave's in a roll, though, right?
Yeah.
Thanks, Dave.
Dave's gone over the scope nicely.
Dave wants to be an executive.
So,
thanks, Dave.
We'll recap it. Starting on, I would consider at the Magic City substation, that's where we'll construct a new 230 to 115 kV substation and a new 230 kV line for 20 miles to the existing McHenry substation. This route will follow the existing corridor of existing line 0850, which is a 115 kV line. As we construct the new line, we'll be putting line 850 onto that new structure. So there'll be one structure with two lines on it, and then we will remove the old line that is currently there.
So in real general terms, can you break down the cost of the line from the substation? It would be like 20
yeah.
and 29.
It's approximately what? 13 for the substation and 27 for the new line. And then we've got an additional $4.5 million for that line to be transferred and removed. And we've got a $2 million line. The 115 kV line ins and outs being reconfigured, and then the balance being land rights for the new corridor that's adjacent to the existing corridor.
How much usable life is left in that line that's coming out? Is there some value that even if you didn't need the bigger project, you'd have to replace that line? So we could say that even if we didn't need more, this line would have to be replaced like within X amount of years, or what's left in that line, and what would it cost just to replace that line?
Yeah, life for the estimate we used the year 2027 okay. on that existing facility, and just to reconstruct it, I guess it is general as a general number good enough. I would say,
yeah, of course,
ballpark 750 a mile, or between 500,000 and 750 a mile. Does that sound right, David? Is that what you'd use for a indicative estimate?
Yeah, for like, for like.
So between 10 and 15
I'm just trying to make a point that some of this cost is just going to be refurbishing what you already have, and we get some more for it. So it's a bigger number, but we'd have to replace that line at some point in time anyway. And then what's the life of this line going to be then? If it goes into 2018, was it a 30-year life or a 50-year life? Or
it is 75 to 100-year life, I would say. It's, you know, the corners will be concrete with steel poles, and the tangent structures will be steel poles embedded in culverts.
Okay. Mm. And then how long is this going to meet your needs? Should we make it a 345?
As far as I know, the 230 will adequately serve NSP's needs well into the future, at least to what we calculated our load saturation point to be.
In the mine, in your service territory.
In our service territory. It doesn't include the co-op's loads in the area, but these assets are sized to, I think I always say, for the next 50 years.
Okay.
I don't want to have to deal with you guys 50 years from now. So.
any further upgrades to this area, if they are required, if it needs a little additional voltage support, we're talking about upgrades like capacitor banks or some potential reconductoring of these lines as they reach the end of their life. Those are the kind of upgrades we at most foresee in the future, which I feel would tend to be a little bit less expensive than a major capacity expansion that we're proposing here.
What else you got, Noel?
That's really about it.
Okay.
Let me know if you guys think of any other questions on that.
I've got some when we wrap up, so don't worry. Well, I have one slide that I believe is the next one. And what I'll talk about is what we've done so far as developing the public consensus and purchasing easement options and working with the various agencies. What we did at the start... Oh, does that change the slides?
Middle button.
When we looked at this, we had the two endpoints, the McHenry and the Magic City area endpoint. And I'll start with just selecting where we propose to build the Magic City substation. Obviously, the closer it is to Minot, the better it would serve the load. But then again, if you push a substation into a residential area, you get resistance from that too. So we saw that there was an opportunity near the wastewater treatment ponds, being a substation is more of a land use that's compatible with that that sort of industrial kind of land use. So we focused on that area, worked with the various landowners, and found a willing seller, and then we purchased 50 acres of land to put that new substation on. So that became
50
our...
50 acres?
Yeah.
And a big substation, ain't it?
The footprint of the substation will be 10 acres, but we wanted to buy enough area so that we have a buffer so that we don't get encroachments into that near the substation. And then when lines come into the substation, both the ones we're proposing and possible future lines, that it gets congested. And we've seen that having control of the land around the substation really pays off in the future, just to avoid the conflicts of undesirable land use encroaching in the area of the substation and then configuring lines in and out of the substation.
I get that, but what do you do with it all in the meantime?
Different projects do different things. We have in the past just leased the excess land back to the landowners and they farm it. Another option is to plant it in prairie grass. You know, we don't want to have something that we have to maintain and spend money on. So those are really the two options. Have the farmers
work the land, or we can plant it in a prairie.
I'm not sure you can pull that off. Isn't that the exact corporate farming thing that the discussion is with what Dapple did down there? I don't think you can buy that. And I mean, I don't mind so much, but I don't think it's legal.
Is the opposition taking the land out of its function as farmland?
To corporate ownership.
To corporate ownership, yep. And of ag land. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. You might have to curtail that some.
What's it zoned as now?
I don't know the zoning exactly, but it's farmland and it's surrounded by farmland. So I imagine it's agricultural.
You have to get it rezoned to build a substation?
We didn't, Tom.
We don't need that permit for Ward County, right?
Right, and it was the city of Minot had jurisdiction because it was within their buffer. Jurisdiction.
Yeah, grab a mic. Yeah,
I don't remember the details, but one of the uses in that zoned district was utility. I don't remember general utility. Maybe it was, but this is across the gravel road, I believe, from the wastewater treatment facility.
Well, a lot of these are siting questions, quite honestly, but it's good backdrop that these questions will come at some point in time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But we'll definitely follow up on that.
And a portion of the substation land we'll be using as a laydown yard during construction of the line.
I'm trying to visualize 50 acres.
Okay, so back to the siting process is that we've identified our northern endpoint, and obviously the southern endpoint is the McHenry substation, and we looked at the land in between those two endpoints, and it is the vast majority is farmland, primarily cultivated land with some prairie mixed in there or some pasture land. And we looked at various options. The thing that we were drawn to as the most efficient option is following that existing line that goes diagonally between the two endpoints. And our initial proposal to the public was to build the new 230 line adjacent to the existing line. And the reason we did that was we had concerns with cost. It cost more to combine them. Constructability wise, we can't take that existing line out of service for the length of time it would take us to build the new line. So that was an issue. And then reliability. It's better to have two separate lines rather than them combined on one structure. And so we presented that to the landowners and found that the landowners did not like another line being proposed adjacent to an existing line. And you can guess at what the reasons were, that they work that land, they have big equipment, and these are very much obstacles to their equipment. And they did not want to see another line built next to that existing line. So we went back to the drawing board and looked at those three criteria that we had that kind of prevented us from going to this at the beginning. It does cost more to combine them, but we need to get landowners on board, so we thought it was worth the extra money to at least address that land use impact that we heard from the landowners. Constructability-wise, our proposal is to build the new double circuit line adjacent to the existing line while the existing line is still in service, and then once the new line is built, then the old line can be removed, and that entails us purchasing new easements from the landowners. And then reliability-wise, David did the analysis and found that the reliability is sufficient and long-term enough that even with the two lines combined, we get what we need for performance. So since the public meeting in December of 2015, we've worked with individual landowners, and to date we have 72% of the landowners signed up in easement options. We have worked with local permitting agencies, and that primarily right now is McHenry County and North Prairie Township. So those are the two local permits that we've already applied for. And we're working on that now. And what we intend to do is bring a permit application to you with more than 72%. We're pretty confident we can get to 80% of the landowners signed by the time we submit a permit application. And we intend to have the local permits in hand also.
Do you expect to get all of them voluntarily?
All of the landowners? It would be nice if we could, and we certainly are trying to do that, but it seems in every project that we have, there are one or two that don't come along, or maybe they come along at the very end of the process after a permit is issued. So ideally we would, but we may not.
It's curious if they're, unless I'm misunderstanding, they already have a line, so there already is an easement there. You're just basically replacing it or adding to it, and then you're going to take the other one down. Mm-hmm. So they just wish they didn't have one at all. They want to be done with it, or?
Yeah, and that's the way our perspective is that not we're building a new line, we're combining it with an existing line, we're purchasing more easement, and we're proposing a configuration that we think is better than the existing condition. So we think that's a pretty good deal for the landowners. But you're right. There are landowners that really wish there wasn't a line on their property now. And, you know, we're doing our best to work with them. And we have a good story from what I just told you. We think we're being very reasonable and very accommodating. But there seems to always be some people who don't want to go along with the project.
And these landowners, sorry, Randy, don't benefit from the power that's provided here. It's not power that serves them, so there's really no vested interest for themselves in this line. Is that accurate?
I'll give that one to David.
Yeah, I know that NSP does not serve everybody along the route. I'm not sure who their service provider is.
They buy groceries in Minot, they're benefited by the line. They buy gas in Minot, they're benefited by the line.
But, you know, I just want to state, though, that the 230 is supporting the whole area in general, you know, including Basin, Central Power. I mean, they're very supportive of what we're trying to do with our portion of the project.
Is this diagonal line, is it very much straight line, or are there lots of little jogs in it?
It's very straight. It's a very straight H-frame across pretty much agricultural land. In fact, the picture on the last page is what it looks
so
like.
There aren't little places where you're on somebody's, where the original was on the edge of someone's property, and you made kind of a right angle in there so as to stay along the edge of the land or something like that. It's a straight diagonal.
That's correct, yes.
You know, it's all ratepayer dollars, and so, you know, we haven't talked about cost of easements since the CapEx lines, but you guys got to do what you got to do. But, you know, the landowners that come along early should not be penalized, and the landowners that come along late should not get more money, my opinion. Do you guys have a policy, Excel, that everybody gets the same?
Yes, sir.
Based on what their value of their land is worth? I mean, if one person's land is better than the other, I get that. But
yes, you bet we do. We have a very strict intention to be fair to everybody. That means if somebody at the end of the process holds out for more money, then we go back to the people who signed up earlier. You know,
or you take them to court and they get paid.
Yeah, exactly. We have to put a limit on how far we can go, and where we accommodate somebody in some way, we have to be willing to accommodate everybody else in that same way. And it's very much...
Any idea how many landowners are on this 20-some mile track?
It's in the 30s. It's okay. There's lots of kind of larger landowners.
Well, it's just an interesting dilemma about the whole. I think you guys are doing, in my opinion, the right thing here, and it shouldn't be that complicated, but it is because people want money, and they've been paid once for those things, and they'll get paid once out of this. It's not like a pipeline. Mm-hmm. But then I wonder, at what point do we have to, can we not sight align? Looking over at Jerry a little bit here too, but I know like if XL wanted to just swap out some of those poles, we wouldn't have to go through a sighting, you'd just swap them out. What triggers it to actually have to be sighted? Is it just it's 230 and that's the end of it? But if we were replacing this 115 line, just replacing it, you wouldn't have to sight it, would you?
That's for you, Jerry.
If it stayed at 115, right. It's not sightable. But if they're replacing the 115 with a 230, I think it's sightable.
And the fact that it's not in the same exact spot and all that, I just was...
But remember, there's some new definitions in the law that talks about if you're within 300 feet of an existing line, that you can use your existing permit or grandfathered status.
Well, I just was thinking through some of that. that.
But they don't have a permit because it was a 115.
But it would have been grandfathered, I think, built before the Siting Act.
Okay.
I'm sure you guys have looked at all that, but if you haven't, maybe take a look at it.
Oh, we did, yeah. In fact, Jerry and I have talked about it, and you're right on track, is that that existing facility is 115, and that therefore doesn't even meet the definition of what Jerry referred to as the line. So we can't use that provision in the law because of the existing is only 115. If the existing line was 230, then I think that we could.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We have consulted with various regulatory agencies and find there's no showstoppers there. And like I said, we're in the process of getting permits for the two local agencies that we need permits for.
Did I miss the answer when you guys need this in operation? Is that
that's the, I'll the last slide? To the last slide.
December of 18.
Yeah. So this is just an abbreviated timeline of what we've been up to and where we're going to go. Beginning with open house in December of 2015 at the left side. Are about a year of working with the landowners and agencies. We filed our CBCN application in September. Right now we're in a local permitting phase, and we hope to file the corridor and route permit in January of 17, with a hope to start construction in September of 2017. In service December 2018.
So the PCNN, if it's granted, then that means we'll give you some rate return at some point in time. How do you pay for all this in the beginning? You just put it in a book somewhere, and then when it comes time for the next rate case, or this drop into the transmission rider, how do you going to cover that?
Commissioner, I think initially it'll go through the transmission cost rider, and this project will be completed when? End of 2017? 2018. So a couple years out.
Was this in our 16 rider or our 15 rider?
No. And if by some chance there's a general rate filing, of course, then it could be introduced in a test year in a general rate case at that point in time.
You guys submitted your 16 rider yet for transmission?
Yes.
It's not in there?
No.
I appreciate the joint planning that you embarked on with Basin and efforts to try to maximize infrastructure, minimize footprints, et cetera, and reduce redundancies. But you said that the Basin's going to be using your infrastructure and there won't be a cost share. And that's curious to me. Why? Or how that's going to work?
Basin will ensure that they have contract paths through the substation, so they'll need to own whatever bus and breaker at the substation to maintain their connectivity to their load.
You're paying for all the substation, though. Your customers will be.
For our portion, but when Basin interconnects, that'll be a different project, and then Basin will have to pick up the cost for the necessary construction that would be required to accommodate their interconnection.
And so their interconnection, they'll pay for the actual interconnection costs, but will they be benefiting from the underlying infrastructure that you've already built and that your customers are paying for?
That is correct.
Why wouldn't they get charged for that?
Well, I would say that we benefit from each other, systems in this area.
That makes me a little uneasy without seeing how and, you know, in what ways and if it's equal.
No, but I think you're spot on, Commissioner, because if it's a contract path, they have to pay you monies to get that power to them, and that goes back to the rate that SPP and MISO have negotiated on those power flows back and forth. So that's kind of...
So they are paying for it through the contract? They pay... That is covered in the contract fee that goes to MISO, I suppose. Is that what you're saying?
No, well, what I'm saying
is that it might be the case. I'm not sure.
What I'm saying is that Basin will own the necessary bus work and equipment at the substation to maintain their metallic path through the substation to avoid any requirements to buy transmission service from one company to the other.
But they're... If this substation didn't exist, where would they go? Would they be building a new ward substation?
I'm not sure what Basin would do in isolation of NSP doing nothing, but I think what I'm trying to say here is that we have assets that serve the load in the area, but they have assets as well.
Agreed. And what I want to understand is and make sure of is that Xcel customers aren't building a substation and weathering the costs of that are partially should be borne by Basin customers because they're using it.
Well, I would say that the way NSP is benefiting from Basin interconnecting to the Magic City substation, and I'm just going to go back to what Tom said about the double circuiting. One of the benefits to us about having the connection from Basin is one of the contingencies we have to look at is loss of a double circuit tower if it's more than a mile long. Having this connection to Basin system provides us that reliability redundancy to allow us to do the double circuiting option.
Okay, so what does that mean? So you can use their lines if theirs go down? Or if yours go down, you can use their lines?
That would be, a good understanding. During emergencies, we could lean on each other's system if an ice storm were to come through and knock down a couple of Basin and WAPA's lines or vice versa for NSP.
So they would also be benefiting from yours, right? So
that would the whole area benefits.
And yet still just Xcel customers are paying for that substation.
Just that substation minus any interconnection costs it would take to interconnect Basin Electric.
Am I missing something, Jerry? I mean, why isn't there more of a cost share on that, the cost of the substation?
Well, it's always hard to figure out who benefits from what, because it's an integrated network. And when you kind of do cost allocation, there's a general rule to try and follow who benefits and who pays. But it's not always possible to determine exactly how much benefit one's going to get or another. And so you end up trying to come up with an arrangement for the cost as to who's paying it. I'm not familiar with what Basin's what their costs are in this project and how they've come up with the allocations between what they do. I think they've come up with an agreement that one company will build this and another company will build that. and they'll just be responsible for their own costs.
I just don't see that Basin is building anything.
Maybe this will help. The Logan to Mallard line is currently built to 230 kV standards today. So the long-term plan is the next upgrade that would happen in this area is Basin would convert that line to 230, which would entail them building the new substation.
See, I think my colleague is spot on here. It kind of goes back to where I was poking around early in this discussion of, I think we need something from you guys, a document that says just exactly what the commissioner's question is that what are the benefits that Basin is realizing from this substation and how is it playing out for who's paying what in the future? What is, to your knowledge, Basin's build-out plan? And, I mean, I'm thinking that something like that, we need more information on it because just you're telling us, which is great, but there's not a, don't take it personal, not a precise certainty in what you're saying. And this isn't informal, so we can put it in the record and make a decision. But the whole basis of the Otter Tail SPP argument is just we're poking around right here that all of a sudden they build this, and next thing you know, SPP comes back and says, no, it's not right now. You guys got to pay us a bunch of money and have just some more information about this agreement between Basin and NSP that is agreed to and put that as an exhibit. So if somehow there's a fight down the road, we got something in here.
Yeah, it seems like these more informal arrangements, which this feels like to me, sort of an informal agreement. I could be wrong, but if I'm wrong, then you can come back and spell it out. Those informal arrangements don't seem to work that well in this integrated with these MISOs and SPPs of the world who have their own idea of how things should be allocated.
And there are no joint operating procedures. And I mean, it's a different world than NSP and Basin just agreeing to something and going to work. It does not work that way anymore.
Commissioners, if it would be acceptable, we can follow up with some more specificity with this and a couple of the other questions that have come up, too.
I guess I'd just like to point out, you know, the whole idea behind everything we're doing is trying to maintain. The way you get around contracts is you actually own the piece of equipment between point A and B. So in this case, if Basin interconnects to NSP's substation, they're actually going to own part of our substation that they can route their power around, and hence a contract wouldn't be required because they actually own the piece of equipment. So it'll be a metallic ownership from Logan's substation through Magic City to Mallard substation.
See, that's the point of debate, I think, is it's not Basin's power. It is Basin's, but SPP controls a lot of the flows, and they have their agreements back and forth, and trying to fully understand that, I think, is what we're trying to do here.
Well, and you said that they're going to own the equipment that it's routed to, but the underlying strength of that substation, the capacity of it, is going to be borne by XL customers, and Basin's not going to share in those costs. I'm not an engineer, so you'll have to dumb it down. If
NSP's customers gain the additional reliability of having those lines that interconnect at Magic City, in cases of contingencies on the proposed 230 line as a single or loss of both circuits, but I think we can work with Dave Cedarquist to bring more clarity. But
that's where I think maybe we're talking. You're thinking as an engineer, right? You got it. Does value make sense? But the argument that's taking place right now is that SPP is not honoring what Otter Tail thinks are appropriate sources. So if they come back and they say, well, wait, this is not right, you're actually using more of our stuff, they're going to send you a bill. And so that's what we're trying to avoid here, one of the things. And I still, just pragmatically, if those systems weren't there, what would Basin be using? They'd have to do something. So they're getting a benefit from this system. And so what is that benefit? And have that explained out, and then we go from there to see if they should pay for it. And maybe there's a counter agreement by maybe XL is benefiting somewhere else in this transmission build-out that offsets what Basin's gaining here, but we just have that understanding. Vic, you got any thoughts here? You're our SPP guy. I know you've been just chomping at the bit here. Vic is our SPP guru, and Jerry's the MISO guru.
Okay, so I'll kind of give you my two cents on this, and correct me, guys, if I'm kind of getting any of this wrong. So Xcel needs this substation and this line to support the load in Minot, their load from their generation, not Basin's, okay? So you need this substation one way or the other. Now, Basin sees this as an opportunity to connect to that substation to benefit both sides. So let's forget about Basin for 1 minute and just talk about this substation. So if Basin didn't exist, you guys would still need this substation so you can get the higher voltage closer to Minot. I mean, the layperson's easy idea would just be, well, make the whole thing 230, but that doesn't work out well with residential and things like that. So get it as close as you can, move it up to 230. So you need that substation for the load growth in that area. Is that roughly correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So we need this.
You're on the clock, Vic.
Okay. Now, Basin sees this. You know, Xcel is going to put in this substation. We can take advantage of that. We have a lot of customers up in that area. We need some additional lines. We can connect to this substation, and at that point, Xcel and Basin are benefiting at the same time for this whole contingency thing that we're talking about. So even though they're connected to the substation, the normal flow of power would be from Xcel's generation to Xcel's load, Basin's generation to Basin's load. They just kind of go by each other in the substation. Maybe I'm oversimplifying that, but...
So wouldn't they help pay for it then, the substation? Some sort of a charge?
Well, they have to pay for their connection to it. So I think they have, you know, however many miles, 5 miles a line going from what they have to this substation and back out.
Yeah, I don't know the exact mileage they would have to construct in and out.
So it's whatever it costs to hook them up to the substation is Basin's cost. They have to pay for adding on to the site, the new transformers, and all those kind of things. But once they connect, both sides are benefiting because of this contingency stuff. So
that I get. That I understand.
Okay.
It's just understanding that 100% of the costs of their use and connection to that substation is being borne by Basin customers, and they aren't somehow taking advantage of the investments made by the Xcel customers that and not paying for it.
Sure.
And if does their connection to that reduce Xcel's ability to expand in the future and somehow,
right,
you know, minimize the potential capacity that has for Xcel customers? Maybe it doesn't. Just say no if it doesn't. I mean,
right. And that's more technical than I've been able to comprehend. Right. But
I can jump in on the technical question.
Well, maybe we could go round and round and round here, but I think that this is where we need more information.
All right. So Dave is saying let's provide follow-up. So I think we've got it all out there.
Yeah.
We'll look at what you guys offer us, and we can ask more questions from there. All right. Randy had a couple more questions on a separate subject.
Yeah, on two separate subjects. Way back toward the end in Appendix B in Figure 2, there's a whole bunch of potential future improvements. Those are just that. They're future things. They don't have to do with this project, correct? Okay. And then...
That is correct.
In the introduction on page 9, do you have that with you? If not, I'll read the parts and frame the questions. In reading this under the number 5, the need for the project, it seems there are two problems. You have thermal overloads and low voltages. And those are separate things, right?
Correct.
And they're both caused when certain elements of the system are out of service.
That is correct.
Okay, so low voltages, I would presume, would cause lights to flicker or motors to get ruined because there's not enough voltage and things like that, correct?
That's yes, low voltages can damage customer electric equipment.
And thermal overloads is when you're just trying to push too much energy down not a big enough power line, right? And you lose power because it's lost to heating.
Yeah, that is correct. You're overheating the line.
And losing your power, so it doesn't get there.
Yeah, eventually the system will protect itself and
okay.
isolate.
So what elements of the system go out of service that cause the low voltage, and what elements of the system go out of service that cause the thermal overloads?
So one of the for the low voltage, one of the more critical contingencies is if you lose the existing connection between mallet and Cirrus, that hangs the entire Minot load radial.
Hold it here, between Mallard. Oh, okay, through town there.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the connection between Mallard and Cirrus, if that connection is lost, the entire load at Cirrus is hanging radial from the McHenry substation off the 25-mile-long 115 kV line today. That causes the low voltages. There's a lot of voltage drop along that line. So the way this project addresses that's where breaking that line into a shorter segment helps out. So by having the new Magic City Cirrus line at 5 miles as opposed to 25, if you lose the existing Mallard to Cirrus connection, the other source, which would be Magic City to Cirrus, is strong enough to hold the voltages up to acceptable levels.
So the voltage, because it's a 230 line, will be more easily maintained from McHenry to Mallard, and then you won't have that much drop-off from Mallard to Cirrus because it's shorter.
That is correct.
That solves the low voltage problem.
And by putting in the new 230 line between McHenry and Magic City, offloads the 115 system, which mitigates the thermal overloads observed on the lines. Certain outages, such as the loss of Logan to Mallard, we observe where that's where the 115 lines start overloading. For the new transformer at Magic City, the 230 115 kV transformer provides additional transformation capacity to prevent the McHenry transformer from overloading under certain conditions.
Such as?
I believe it's actually the same outage, Logan to Mallard, because all that power is trying to go through the McHenry transformer to get on that 115 line to get to Cirrus.
So you're doing this to solve a problem that's caused by Basin Electric's line not being able to keep up from Logan to Mallard.
There are also thermal overloads if we lose some of the NSP elements, such as on the reverse side, if you lost the McHenry to Cirrus line, some of the 115 on the west side also starts to overload. Because, again,
you agreed with him, though, with what he just said, that Basin's problem is part of this problem. You're adding additional information, but is that right, that this is what he was?
I don't agree that this is Basin's problem, because the cause here is NSP's load.
Okay.
Again, you know, everything comes down to is Cirrus is the biggest load in the area, so that is what is drawing the most power on the 115 system as it exists today.
But so, the primary point that you mentioned that causes the thermal overloads was Basin's problem.
I wouldn't say it's the primary. It's
significant.
It's one of the many contingencies that affects this area. But again, you know, if NSP loses the McHenry to Cirrus line, we still have the same problem where we're overloading Basin's line because of an outage on our system.
Let's just address the Basin part. When does theirs, is the problem that theirs is overloaded or that they lose power from time to time on that line?
I guess I don't follow the
When the losses between Logan and Mallard, however frequently it happens, but you mentioned it, so it happens sometimes, when that causes your thermal overload from McHenry to Mallard, what has happened on the Logan to Mallard line that causes that to occur? Is that when...
It's just out of service, so it's not feeding power to the area, which means the rest of the 115 kV system has to pick up the slack, so to speak, to continue to serve the loads in this area.
So theirs isn't a thermal overload problem. It's more
of
voltage problem.
If that line isn't in service.
It could be anything. It's really just it's referred to as a contingency. So this could happen. It could be because of an ice storm. It could be because some other line went down and took this one out with it. It could be lots of things. It may or may not have happened. I don't know.
How many megawatts is the Velva Wind project?
11.88 nameplate.
And so what's the impact on this line, whether that is blowing full capacity or not blowing at all, when on times when the demand is great in Minot?
If it's at full output, the Velva Wind Farm can back off on the loading of the McHenry transformer because you're injecting power locally, but the size of the wind farm is relatively small. You're taking our peak this past summer was 93 megawatts. You subtract 12, still puts us at 80, which is a loading level of concern for the system in this area.
So if that's in a peak demand, the 90-plus megawatt demand time, if that's not running at all, you're able to bring enough energy from McHenry to take care of Minot?
Correct.
So what's the
system intact.
So what good is the wind farm then?
I would say that we generally don't rely on wind farms for reliability. One of the study assumptions we did was to turn it off in this particular study.
Right.
Yeah, just to piggyback, I saw that set off that farm, the Rugby Wind Farm and Prairie Winds wind farms. It was one of your assumptions. So could you build a gas peaker closer to town and just not have to upgrade this line?
You would have the opposite problem. You wouldn't have the ability to get the generation out. Generation outlet would be an issue.
But if you need the power in mind, it would be right there. What do you mean get it out?
If a generation plant was proposed to the area, it would go through the MISO interconnection process. And so in that process, they'll determine the network upgrades and the facilities that are currently there today in Minot aren't designed to outlet generation in the area.
But you'd only run it if you needed it locally. So you wouldn't have to have a pathway out. Basin has done that in other areas. Anyway, that's in a sidebar. But I think you guys are getting pulled into a discussion you didn't anticipate about the two RTOs. I mean, I'll be honest with you. But that's what we're all thinking, I think, because it's become a very complex mess.
I think the little bit of RTOs that I've, when they do that planning, like you said, for the generation, if you want a new generator online, it has to be deliverable anywhere
in the
on
system.
So okay. You have to be able to get that from Minot to Minneapolis.
But back to Randy's points, though, so making the argument that the root cause of some of this is not having enough stuff, that Basin's adequate pathway to get to you, and you've got a contract from GRE to move stuff up. Walk me through that again, why it's not their problem to bump this up?
For outages on our system, system isn't.
Is the root cause that Minot is becoming too dependent on pathway transmission lines from generation into Minot?
I think the root cause is that the system was designed for the load in Minot in 1960, and Minot has just now grown to a point where the existing transmission system is no longer adequate to serve the entire area, and it's time to upgrade the transmission system to serve Minot for today's system conditions.
And in the integrated grid, that's where the backdrop of our questions are. Is XL customers paying for more than their share, since everybody's going to benefit from what you're saying? So I guess what I was thinking is just to see if Randy's got some more questions, but we've got a couple more minutes. That, you know, the status of the GRE contract is one thing that I'd really like to know where we're at. because I know that you rely, without that GRA contract, you would have no power in a mine, the way I understand it. And Kathy, I know you've heard that before. Not Dave, I know you've heard that before. And so just see where that contract's at. And if that's a 30-year contract that just got renewed, then I feel pretty good. If it's up next week, then I don't feel very good. And then there's the additional info that you can give us on the basin and I call it the basin / SPP connection at that sub. So, because really, I don't know, is it a basin connection or it's an SPP connection? I mean, how do you define that, really?
Let's say, yeah, I mean, if it's basin, it's SPP,
yeah,
but it's the same.
So, you guys, anything you can provide to kind of walk through the how you got to what you told us, the backstory on that, and we'll put this in there. I think that would help answer a lot of the questions maybe Julie had and the ones that I had. And then you talked about these studies, the MISO and SPP studies. Do they have summaries on those that maybe would answer more detail what Commissioner Crispin's questions were, my questions? That if SPP studied this and MISO studied this, they would have their studies have led you to this proposal, I'm guessing, right? So their studies can maybe serve as a reference of how we got to here. I mean, that sound reasonable?
Yeah, so MISO studied NSP's portion under the MTEP. I can find out which MTEP it is. I think it's 16. It's either 15 or 16.
But Jerry and Vic, I mean, isn't that kind of what we should be looking at?
Well, wasn't there a
Load servings? I remember.
Load servings study done that I think is in the back of this filing that showed where there would be contingencies, where overloads would be and so forth if they had contingencies. I had another question.
Well, hang on before we move to that. So can you guys, Jerry probably might be right, but can you just provide some context of those three things back to us? And then when do you guys looking for a decision on something like this? Look over at Dave because he usually drives a bus and some of that stuff. The sooner the better, right?
Well, by the end of the year, I guess.
So we can go
this
from
year?
There.
It still has to be cited, so I mean.
Right.
Well, but for me, that I think if you provide that stuff, that would answer all the questions that I would have. And then, Randy, is there anything special that you wanted in addition to that, maybe?
Well, just if you wanted to add anything regarding what kinds of occurrences cause these thermal overloads and what kind of occurrences cause the low voltage issues.
Just to expand upon that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can pull the tables out of this planning study report that lists out the contingencies. Yeah. And
I want to be clear, you know, if there's a reliance on each other here, I'm not just talking about holding back and specifying occurrences that are related to NSP-owned facilities. If there's a reliance and it has to do with Logan to Mallard, then we should know about that, that their occasional failures or whatever. I don't mean to paint it in a negative light, but if there's issues on that line that are causing these overloads or voltage drops, then we should know about it.
Well, and like I was saying just before, you guys got pulled in a much larger discussion than a PCNN, but it's all relevant, right? Where this interconnection seam that's been created, it's just, I'm very concerned how the cost allocation, I mean, this stuff is happening, right? So if you can answer the questions about making sure that you've vetted all this out, that you're not putting a proposal to us that's more than your fair share and back up some reasons why that's the right thing and everybody agrees to it, then we're home. I think it's just kind of beefing up a little bit. If this was 3 years ago and it was just Basin and you guys, I think it's a layup. But it's a different world now. So, Jerry, you got 5 minutes and then we're done. You had a question.
My only question.
3 minutes and you're done. 2 minutes and you're done.
Thoris substation. If I'm remembering right, are there two transformers there?
There are three transformers there, 50 MVA each.
Okay, so if you lose one of those transformers, the other two can handle it?
That is correct. Distribution upgraded TR3, I believe, a couple of years ago to handle the growing loads at Cirrus.
Okay, I was remembering losing a transformer in Grand Forks some years back and losing the town. And could that happen in Minot? Does this Magic City sub address that at all?
Yeah, it'll provide, there will be three. You're talking about the Prairie Project. So this will be similar to Prairie in that Prairie today had, or actually Prairie a couple years ago only had two transformers serving the entire city. We added a third one. In a similar way, this is the same thing. There's a transformer at McHenry, at Logan, and then there will be a third one at Magic City.
Okay, so the one at Magic City would be able to, if you lost, say, the whole Soros substation, would Magic City be able to serve the town?
We are sizing the transformer at Magic City to handle the loss of both Logan and the McHenry transformers.
Okay. Is that when MnCOTA tied in with NSP up in Grand Forks that solved that problem you're talking about?
There was two Prairie substations. One was MnCOTA's and one was NSP, but I'm a little beyond trying to figure out what solved what up there.
Yeah.
All I remember was that it was like 30 below zero, and we lost that the main transformer in that sub, and it wasn't good.
How long ago was that?
10 years ago, was it?
You guys, you know Carolyn, your lady, your transmission guru back in. If you just bounce this by Carolyn, she'll know exactly what I'm talking about, and she can probably answer these questions. And because I've been working with her and the other guys about a lot of this stuff with SPP, so she'd be able to put together a couple of paragraphs that answer all these questions that I think that you guys got pulled into here today. Okay. Anything else, Rancher?
I'm good.
You guys got anything else today? You gentlemen?
No, but we sure appreciate your time.
Okay, I think we'll, Dave, you get that stuff to us as soon as you can, and we'll have I don't know that we'll need a work session on it. Maybe we will. We'll get it all in, and then we'll see what we want, but give it to us. It won't take long, I don't think, to make a decision. So, okay, with that, we'll go ahead and close the informal on case number PU16644. Thank you all.